A Short History of a Long Travel from Babylon to Bethel by Stephen Crisp, eminent servant of Jesus Christ. As a Quaker minister introduction, because this writing was feared as fictional, the Quaker Society did not publish it for 20 years after it was finished. Censored by the Quakers' official body, it sat without being printed until 1711. It was then reprinted more than 20 times. John Bunyan was a Baptist minister and an enemy of the Quakers, writing several books severely critical of the Quaker faith. Click to read Fox's rebuttals to Bunyan's Quaker Critical Book 1 and Book 2. Bunyan's famous book The Pilgrim's Progress had appeared and was widely acclaimed as the greatest religious novel of the age. Stephen Crisp wrote this contrasting tract to point out the differences between Bunyan's outward faith of rituals compared to the inward, renewal-of-heart Quaker faith, using a similar fictional account of a journey. Bunyan was also imprisoned for preaching without a license. Through the efforts of George Whitehead, another eminent Quaker minister, Bunyan was freed from prison by decree of King Charles Roman II, showing that Quakers loved their enemies, returning assistance for insult. The title of Crisp's work has great meaning. He starts his journey in Babylon, the Protestant churches and Catholic churches of his time, and still today, the beast with horns like a lamb, imitating the Church of Christ, and ends up, while still on earth, in Bethel, the house of God, the temple of God in New Jerusalem. The table below is presented to contrast this 30-page novelette of Crisp with the 207-page novel of Bunyan. Element of journey: Crisp's Babylon, to Bethel Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress pack on back full of clothing, etc. The burden of original sin journey's leader discards humans, relies on the light instead human leadership, crosses the river of death to life, crosses early in the journey, crosses only after death reaches the destination, arrives at the house of God while alive. Only after death, this is in truth the journey of Stephen Crisp. He started in the Protestant Babylon, joined the Quaker faith, and journeyed to the kingdom of God, New Jerusalem, through the grace and leadership of Jesus Christ, the teacher. He subsequently faithfully ministered to others in their journey to the kingdom of God within. A Short History of a Long Travel from Babylon to Bethel. In the days of my youth, when I lived at home in my father's house, I heard many people talk of the house of God, and that whoever managed to get into it enjoyed all manner of happiness, both in this world and that which is to come. A great desire kindled in me, if it were possible, to get into the house. Yet I did not know where it was, neither did those who talked of it, but they had heard the report, and they reported what they had heard. There were also some books that had been written by men who had been in that house, which books did declare much of the joy and felicity they had in the house. These books I got and read them over and over, which did much strengthen my belief in the truth of the reports. Yet by no means could I tell which was my way. But so ardent were my desires that I thought myself willing to forsake my father's house, my country and all, and travel anywhere, wherever my legs would carry me, that I might find this house. Once upon a time, as I was disclosing my mind to a friend of mine upon this subject, he readily told me there were men appointed in every place to guide those who were willing to go there, and it was their business, and they had nothing else to do. When I heard this, I was comforted and desired him, if he loved me, to make me acquainted with one of those men. He told me he would, which he did. When I came to converse with the man, I let him know of the fervent desire I had to get to the house of God, of which I had heard such excellent things, and that I understood he was one appointed to guide any there who were willing to go, and to persuade people to go who were not willing. He very readily answered and told me it was his business to guide any there who were willing to go, and if I would comply with his terms and follow him, he would lead me there. I asked him what his terms were. He said the way was long and would lead him from home, and I must bear his charges of money and something over, to all of which I agreed. So we set forward on our journey early in the morning. But before we had gone one whole day's journey, I saw my guide sometimes stand still and look about him, and sometimes he would pull a little book out of his pocket and read a little to himself, which made me begin to mistrust that he knew the way no better than I. However, I said nothing, but went on following him several days' journey after this manner. The further we went, the more my guide was at a loss. Sometimes he went a little on, and then would look about him, and turn another way, and sometimes right back again for a while, and then turn again. So my suspicions grew very strong, and I began to be in great anxiety of spirit, but said little to him about it. But one day, as we were traveling along, we met a man who took notice of my sad countenance and tired condition. He spoke very kindly to me, saying, "Young man, where are you bound?" When I began to tell him something of my travel, he desired me to sit down upon the grass in a shady place and discourse a little about my journey. So we did, and I told him how things had gone with me to that very hour. While I was telling him my story, my guide fell asleep, at which I was not sorry, for thereby I had the more freedom to discourse with the man. When I had told him all, he pitied me. He told me that to his certain knowledge, this guide of mine had never been at the house, neither did he know the way to it, only that he had gotten some markings of the way, which he had received, as I or any other might. Then he said that if I followed my guide all my days, I would never be closer to it, and should find at last, I had spent my time, money, and labor to no purpose. This discussion so astonished me that I was at my wit's end and didn't know what course to take. The man, seeing what an agony I was in, began to comfort me, and told me that the house I sought was much nearer than I was aware of, and if I would forsake that guide and follow him, he would soon bring me in sight of the house. He said, "And I am one that belongs to that house, and have done so several years. And whereas," he said, "you are to bear his charges and give him money besides, I will assure you, it is not the manner of the guides that belong to this house of God to take money for guiding people there. I myself have been guide to many a one in my time, but never took one penny of them for it." By this time, as you must think within yourselves, how my drooping spirits were comforted, a new hope sprang up, and a resolution to forsake my wandering guide and to follow this new one. Upon which I awakened my guide, told him my intentions, paid him for what I had agreed, and advised him never to serve any poor soul as he had done me. "For I see," I said, "you don't know the way except for what you have learned in some book. If reading a book could have served my purpose of finding this famous house, I didn't needed you or anyone else to guide me to it. For there are very few who have written experience of it, but I have read them diligently. Now I have met a man that I judge has more experience of the way than you have, and I am resolved to go with him, and if you will honestly confess your ignorance and go along with us, come and be welcome. One guide will serve two travelers as well as one in the way." But I could not persuade him, so I left him to find his own way as he pleased. I now set forward with my new guide pretty cheerful, and he entertained me with a good deal of discourse along the way. As he went on in pretty smooth path and without stopping, he told me in a short time we should come in sight of the house, which made my travel easier. He also told me something of the rules and orders of the house, at which I was not at all discouraged, for I considered God was a God of order, and I did not doubt there were good rules and orders in his house, to which I was willing to submit. As we were thus traveling along, he all of a sudden spoke to me, saying, "There is the house." At which I was exceeding glad, for now I thought I had not spent my labor in vain. The nearer we drew to it, the more my joy increased, and when I came in view of it, I was extremely pleased looking at it and viewing the towers and turrets that were upon it, along with the excellent carvings and paintings with which it was adorned, and there was as much art in its presentation as could be imagined. "Oh," thought I, "if there is so much glory without it, surely there is more within, which I shall shortly be a partaker of." As I was thus contemplating my happiness, and had come within, as it were, a bowshot of the house, we were to go down into a valley, which we did. In the bottom of the valley, glided along a small river, and I looked around to see a bridge, but could see none. This made me wonder, but on we went until we came to the river side. Then I asked my guide where the bridge was. Truly, he told me there was none, but we must go through the river, and so must all that go into that house. I was a little troubled within myself, but he told me he had been through it, and there was no danger at all. With that I began to think within myself, have I made all these efforts, only to give up for such a small matter as this? What would I have gone through, when in my father's house, to attain to the knowledge of the house of God and a possession therein? Not water or even fire would have stopped me then, if I had so fair a prospect of arriving as I now have. I told my guide if he pleased to go before me, I would follow him. So in he went, and I after him, but when I came to the middle of the river, it was so deep there that the water went over my head. I quickly moved to keep my feet to the ground and got well on the other side, and my guide and I went up together very pleasantly. When we came to the top of the hill, there was a wide plain, and in the middle of it stood the house. So we went speedily and drew near to it. their eyes saw a very stately porch at the west end of the house, and at the door stood a strong, tall porter, to whom my guide spoke, and said to him in this manner, "This young man has long had a desire to be entertained in the house of God. Therefore, I have conducted him here." The porter asked him which way he had come there. He said, "Through the river." I do not remember if he asked me any more questions, but he made me welcome, and led me into the house, my guide going in with me, through many turnings and windings into a great hall. My eyes went to and fro as I went about the house, and in the great hall there I saw many people, who made me welcome, but none knew the anguish of my soul, for I began to question whether I was not again misled. For I found the house foul and dirty in almost every part, and so lined with spiders and cobwebs, that I thought to myself that it had never been swept clean since it was built. And some things I met with that displeased me even more, as you shall hear. However, a good bed was provided for me to rest upon if I could, and having little desire to resist, after I saw how it was made ready, went to bed, and disposed myself to sleep as I could. But alas! Sleep departed from me, and my spirits were grievously vexed, and my thoughts were many and grievous. Sometimes I thought of the paintings without, and how that did not fit with the dirtiness that was within, and, if I had been deceived, what course I should take. After long and tedious thinking, I rested myself with this thought, "It may be better tomorrow." So I fell into a slumber a pretty long while. In the morning before I arose, I heard two or three contending about some accounts, in which one laid fraud to the other's charge. The other, instead of vindicating himself, fell to a snarling response, with something of the like kind. They grew so hot in words that one threatened to turn the other out of doors and drive him back through the river and never allow him to come into the house any more. My heart was ready to burst with sorrow, and in the anguish of my spirit I arose and went to them, and told them that I little thought to have found such doings or heard such language in the house of God. "I fear," said I am deceived, and brought in among you by a fair show, but see not the glory, peace, and tranquility I expected. So I walked away to another part of the house where I heard a great noise and hard words. As I drew near, I understood it was about choosing an officer. Two were striving for it, and each of them had gone a party of supporters, and each party grew hot against the other. As soon as I could be heard, I spoke to them, and told them, such kind of doings as this resembled more a place in the world called Billingsgate than the house of God. I went on a little farther, and there I heard some women scolding about taking the upper hand, and about fashions in their clothes, and others about getting their children's playthings from each other. All this, and much more than I shall mention, increased my sorrow. Billingsgate, a market near the Billings Gate in London, celebrated for fish and foul language. I now began to long to speak with my guide that brought me there, and with diligent search at last I found him, and began with him in this manner, "Where have you brought me? And where are the rules and orders you told me were in the house of God? I have often read of the beauty, order, peace, and purity of the house of God, but here I find only the opposite. I fear you have brought me to a wrong house and have beguiled me." So I told him what I had heard and seen, to which he replied that I must expect men to have their human frailties and that men were only men. He tried to persuade me to be satisfied and give it another chance. As for the orders and rules he spoke of, they were mostly about foods and drinks and about rules for electing of officers to rule the house of God, as I would see in time if I stayed. As to the dirtiness of the house, he confessed that those committed to keep the house clean had not been as diligent as they ought to have been, but he hoped, upon admonition, they would be more careful. To which I returned this answer, "What? Do you talk of human frailties in the house of God? That complaint is at large in the world, but does not become the house of God into which I have heard none can come, but such as are redeemed from the earth and are washed from their pollutions. For God says, all the vessels in my house shall be holy. And those who dwell in the house of God must have pure hearts and clean hands." And much more I told him of what I had heard and read concerning the house of God. I also told him plainly, I had led in such a belief of the peace, purity, glory, and happiness of the house of God, that I was persuaded that this was not it. And where to find it, I did not know. But if I never found it while I lived, I would never give up seeking, for my desires were ever after it, and I thought nothing would satisfy me short of the enjoyment of it. "But as for your house here," I said, "I have no satisfaction in it, "It is not the place I seek, so I must leave you." His answer to me was, he was sorry that I could not be satisfied there as well as he, but if I could not, he would lay no restraint upon me. For his part, he had directed me as far as he knew, and could do no more for me. After our discourse was ended, I got up and went out, but did not know where to go. Several in the house threw things after me, in a spiteful manner, but none hurt me. So I wandered sometimes north and sometimes south, and every way that came in my mind. But wherever I went, the anguish of my soul went along with me, which was more than any tongue can utter, or pen can declare, or anyone can believe, except this writing should meet with someone that has experienced the same anguish, which, if it does, they will understand. But so it was, I had no comfort night nor day, but still kept going on, not knowing if I was heading right or wrong, and not daring to ask anybody, for fear of being deceived again. Then I went into a vast howling wilderness, where there seemed to be no way. Only now and then I found some men and women's footsteps, which was some comfort to me in my sorrow. But whether they got out without being devoured by wild beasts, or where I should go, I knew not. But in this woeful state I traveled from day to day, searching within myself what I had best to do, whether utterly to despair in that condition, or whether I had best to seek some other town or city, to see if I could get some other guide. The first I saw to be desperate. I also despaired of the last, having been so deceived from time to time, so that all these questionings only increased the bitterness of my soul. One day, as I was traveling in the afternoon, a terrible storm arose with hail and thunder and great wind, which lasted until night and in the night also. Being weary both of body and mind, I laid down under a great tree and after some time fell asleep. When I awoke and came to myself, it was still very dark, and looking about, I saw a small light near me, and it came into my mind to go to it and see what it was, and as I went, the light went before me. Then it came into my mind that I had heard of false lights as ignes fatuus and such like that would lead people out of their way. Then thought I again, how shall I be led out of my way when I know no way of safety? And while I sat down to let these striving thoughts have their course, I took notice and beheld the light as near me as at the first, as if it had waited for me. At which I was strongly affected and thought within myself, maybe some good spirit has come to take pity on me and to lead me out of this miserable condition. So a resolution arose in my mind that I would get up and follow it, concluding in myself that I could not be brought into a much worse condition than I was now in. So I arose and followed it, and it proceeded at a gentle, easy pace at first, and I kept my eye straight to it. But afterwards, I found a great part of the luggage and provision I had got together only burdened me in my journey, so I threw away one thing, and then another that I thought I could best spare. But I kept a great bundle of clothes still by me, not knowing whether I should need them. As I thus went on, and the light before me, it led me out of the wilderness along a plain country without trees or inhabitants, only it appeared as if some few had gone that way. The light kept in that straight path, without any winding or turning, until I came to the foot of a great mountain. And going up that mountain, I found it very hard getting up, and began to consider my large bundle of clothes and garments, and that several of them were of no use for a traveler like myself that did not know how far I should go, nor whether I should want them, if ever I was so happy as to attain what I aimed at, nor whether the fashions would suit the place I was going to. So I threw away some, and soon some others, until none was left but what I wore. Thus, following my guide, I at last got up to the top of this mountain where I saw another yet higher. I also saw a man that asked me where I was going. I told him I could not well tell, but would tell where I desired to go. He asked, "Where?" I said, "To the house of God." He told me it was the way, but he thought I should never get there. I asked him why. He said, "There are in yonder mountain so many vipers, adders, and serpents, and such venomous beasts that they devour many people that are going that way." "For my part," he said, "I also was going, but was so frightened by those venomous serpents that I was forced to turn back and would advise you the same." I answered him, "Friend, I have for a pretty while taken yonder light to be my guide, and it has directed me along this way, and I see it does not leave me. Look, do you see it there before me?" He answered, "Yes, I see it." "Well," I said, "I have heard from travelers that if a man has fire or light, the venomous beasts cannot hurt him, and I intend to quicken my pace a little and follow as close to the light as I can. Come, go along with me and venture it." He said it was true, he had heard that fire would preserve from beasts, but he thought the light would not. However, for his part, he would not venture his sweet life among them. If I would, I might. He wished me well, and so we parted. I then made haste and got pretty near the light, and up I went the second mountain. And when I came almost to the top of it, I saw many serpents' dens and vipers' holes, both on the right hand and on the left. The venomous drew near me and hissed at me, and I began to be in great fear and trembled exceedingly. But many times, when they were ready to sting me, the light would step in or appear between me and them, and they were frightened and ran away into their holes and dens. Oh, when I perceived this, how my heart leaped for joy within me. My joy abounded my fear of the serpents, abated my love to my kind and tender guide increased, and my courage and confidence were renewed, and I began to believe I was in the right way to attain my desire. So on I went, keeping my eye to the light through them all, without harm, until I came to the top of the mountain. Then I saw an exceeding large valley, so that I could not see the farther side of it. It seemed to be all moors or places of water and bogs and mire all over the valley, which began again to dishearten me. But thought I, what shall I do? All is well up to this point. I was strangely delivered from the serpents, and whatever comes of it, if this light doesn't leave me, I will follow it, if it is through fire and water. So I kept on and went down the mountain, a gentle, easy pace, and saw many of those cruel creatures by the way, who put out their stingers at me, but none hurt me. And I took notice the nearer I kept to the light, the more they kept from me. So I got down to the bottom of the mountain, into the large valley, which was very green and pleasant for a little way. But by and by, the light went toward a great moor-like ground full of water, which I thought was very dangerous. But coming just to the side of the place, I saw a small narrow path through the middle of it, just broad enough for a man to walk on it. Into that narrow way the light led me and went before me. While I kept my eye steady to it, I went on safely. But if at any time I began to gaze about, my feet slipped into the mire and puddles, and then it was a lot of effort to get back on my way again. Had not the light kindly and tenderly waited for me, I would have lost sight of it and would have perished in the way. For sometimes it was so far before me that I could hardly discern it, and then I would quicken my diligence and be more careful of my goings and keep as close to it as I could, so that sometimes the light shined all around me and I walked in the shinnings of it with great fullness of spirit. After a long time walking in this narrow way, I lifted up my eyes to the farther side of the moor-like valley and saw beyond that there was a very high mountain, and on the top of it there was a great house. At the sight of the house I was greatly comforted, supposing that might be the house I had for a long time sought. But after this, I met with another hard exercise. For there were many who I perceived had been traveling in that narrow way and had fallen into the mire, some on the right hand and some on the left. They lay wallowing full of envy, some plucking at me to pull me in, others throwing mire and dirt upon me to discourage me. Others would speak very fair, on purpose to draw me into discourse with them, that while thus spending my precious time, I might be left so far behind as to lose the sight of my good guide. But I saw their evil designs and was aware of them. So, keeping in my narrow way until I came to the end of the boggy valley, I then found firm ground under my feet, to my great comfort. I had gone but a little way when my guide, the light, went into a narrow lane, well hedged on both sides, at which I was glad, thinking I could not go wrong and did not now need to take so much care. But alas! I quickly found so many by-lanes and ways which lay almost as straightforward as that I went in, that if it had not been for the light, which went a little before me, I might certainly many times have gone wrong. But by carefully keeping to my good guide, I at last got up the mountain and saw the house again. I then discerned a man of that country, pretty far away. I called to him, "Friend, hello, friend, what is the name of yonder great house?" He told me the name of it was Bethel. I remembered that Bethel was the name by which the house of God was called in my father's country, where I had heard the reports of it, and so earnestly set out to find it. Oh! The joy and consolation that I felt in my soul, no tongue can express, to think that now, after all my travels, perils, and disappointments, I had found what I sought for. So on I went, journeying with unspeakable joy. As I went, I viewed the outside of the house. It was very large and had only one tower. There was no carved work around it, no painting, or any kind of device that could be discerned, but all the stones were curiously joined together from the top to the bottom. I also took notice that all the stones of the building were transparent, some more and some less, and I saw no windows. Drawing nearer to it, I saw it had a large outward court and also a pretty large gate into it, so that a man might go in with a large burden on his back. So, coming to it, in I went, and there I saw many people that were very cheerful and appeared to live very pleasant lives. Some of them told me that they had lived there many years, were well contented, and wanted for nothing. For there was a mighty tree grown in the midst of the court, and the fruit of it was good, and the leaves also, and it bore fruit all the year long. Many were so kind as to invite me to sit down and eat with them, but that I refused, and they showed me a great cistern which they had hewn out to themselves to catch water from the elements, and they had made themselves convenient lodgings in the sides of the court to lodge in. But this did not satisfy me, for I saw my beloved guide pass through them all and enter in at a narrow door at the farther side of it. Whereupon I left them and made halfway to the door where I saw my guide had entered, and I attempted to enter in there, but could not, it was so straight, which put me in great sorrow of mind, and what to do I did not know. My thoughts troubled me on every side, and every way I tried, but without success. Oh, I thought, have all my troubles and labors come to this? Must I be shut out at the last? What shall I do? As I was thus perplexing myself, I thought I heard a voice, but didn't know from where it came, which said, "Young man, strip you of your old garments, and so you may enter." This created even more troubling thoughts, for I was loath to go naked. However, I at least thought it would be better to go in naked than not at all. So I at last I fell to stripping, thinking that a few pitiful rags should not hinder me of so great an enjoyment. And when I was stripped stark naked as ever I was born, I tried to enter and found no great difficulty. And so soon as I was entered, one met me and cast a garment of pure white linen over me, which reached to my feet, and he brought me into a narrow room and said, "Rest here a while." Then I lay down in so much joy and comfort as is impossible to be expressed. All things were so pleasant about me, and my resting place was so delightful, and my heart so fully satisfied, that it overcame me with songs of joy. But I found it my business to be still and quiet in my happy condition that I had come to enjoy. I had not been long in this room before I called out to see the beauty of comeliness of the house. As I walked through it, I found everything so clean and bright that I was ravished in an admirable manner. I also met with some people that welcomed me to the house of God with such kindness as refreshed my heart. And as I became acquainted with them, I noticed their conduct, and their discussions were exceedingly comfortable to me. No quarreling, no contention, no high nor hot words, but all passed with meekness and reverence, and due respect one for another. The young men waited for the words of the ancients, and the virgins carried a reverent respect to the matrons, and there was an universal concern and unity, so that I was greatly amazed. One day, as I was opening my mind to an ancient person, I told him I admired much, and wondered greatly at the universal concord that I had taken notice of, beyond all I had ever met with in my life. He told me it was necessarily so, and couldn't be otherwise, for the guide that had led me there had been the guide of them all. He further told me that there could be no contention, but where two spirits strove for mastery, but that did not happen in this house. His answer was so full and satisfactory to me that I said no more to him at that time, but went on watching and beholding the order of everything I saw until my soul was filled, and I might say my cup did overflow. So that my former labors and disappointments, sorrows and perils, meant nothing to me, now having a full reward 100 times better. So I returned to my rest again, in a larger room than before, singing praises to my God and setting forth the praises of the house and of them that dwelled there. A while later, I was called forth from the room where I was, and told I was not brought to that place only to take pleasure and delight there. But there was work to be done, and I must take my part of it and be faithful and diligent in my employment. To which I answered, it was enough that I had attained my desires in being admitted into this heavenly place. But if there was any business that I could do, I was willing to do it, whatever it was. For it would be my greatest joy to do anything to the advancement of the honor of the house of God and those who dwelled within it. Then he, who had talked with me, told me it was my work to teach the children so far as I knew, and had learned, and as far as I knew, and as far as I should from time to time be further instructed. I was a little amazed at that, knowing my inabilities, but having pondered that part of the sentence a little, that I should be from time to time further instructed, I took courage in my work and made some progress in it with great fear and reverence. Waiting daily for those instructions I was to receive, and which I did receive in an abundant manner. And the work did prosper in my hand, and the children loved me, and I loved them entirely, as though they had been my own children. Many of them grew up to a good understanding, and observed their places and orders to my great delight. After I had thus continued a while, he that talked with me came and told me I must take the charge of that part of the household, and give them their food in due season, and suit everyone's food in dividing to everyone's state and condition, and not feed strong men with milk and babes with strong food. For which purpose he gave me a key that led into the treasury or storehouse, which when I came to see and behold, as abundantly filled with all sorts of nourishments, that would never be exhausted or spent while the world endured. I observed that whatever I and others took out to distribute daily among the household of God, the storehouse was still full as at the beginning, and so continues to this day and forever. Now, having continued a long time in this heavenly habitation, it comes to my mind to let my countrymen and the children of my old father, whom I left in Babylon, hear of me. For I suppose they judge me lost or devoured. But I could be glad if any, yes, all of them, were here to behold and taste and feel what I do. Let none of them say, it happened better with me than with many. For I have understood, since coming into this house, that the same light that appeared to me does appear to any poor distressed soul in the whole world. But the reason that so few come here is because they fear the perils and dangers that are in the way more than they love the light that would lead them through them. And so turn aside and shelter themselves in an old rotten building that at one time or other will fall on their heads and they will perish in the ruins. Now if any have a mind to know my name, let them know that I had a name in my father's country, but in this long and tedious journey I have lost it. But since I came here, I have a new name, but have no characters to signify it by, that I can write or that can read. Yet if any will come where I am, they shall know my name. But for further satisfaction, I was born in Egypt, spiritually called, and my father went and lived in Babylon, about the time the true children of Israel were in captivity. There I became acquainted with some of the stock of the Jews, about the time they were returning to their own land, and they told me wonderful things of the glory of the house they had at Jerusalem, and would have had me go with them. I understood that Solomon, with many thousands of carpenters and masons, had built it, upon which I considered within myself that if Solomon and the carpenters and masons had built it, carpenters and masons might at one time or another pull it down again. So I went not, but sought a city whose builder is God, and now I have found it. Hallelujah in the highest, glory, honor, and renown to his worthy name and power throughout all ages and generations. Amen. This website's purpose is to show how to become free from sin by benefiting from the changing power of God through the cross, which leads to union with God and his kingdom.